Thank you for joining us for The Upside, the University of Illinois Press podcast. I am your host, Elizabeth Hess. I am joined today by the editor of the Journal of American Music, Dr. Todd Decker. He is a professor of musicology at Washington University in St. Louis and teaches courses on 20th century American popular music, film music, and 18th century European art music. We are also joined by University of Illinois Press director and music, dance, and folklore acquisitions editor, Dr. Lori Matheson. We planned this discussion in anticipation of the upcoming Society for American Music conference. Thank you both for joining us. Todd, tell me about how you got involved with the journal American Music.
So my first publication was in the journal American Music. I was commissioned to write a DVD review by Charles Hiroshi Garrett. He was a terrific editor. He helped me make my piece much better. He helped me in really concrete ways. Actually, I go back to the critiques he gave my writing then with my grad students regularly and in my editing of the journal now. So I have a lot of affection for American music as a space that welcomed me as a young scholar into publication. Being the editor, I was asked by Lori and the previous editor, Gail Sherwood McGee, if I would consider taking over the journal for 3 years. I felt it was a big honor and a big responsibility. I think after you've published quite a bit and been on one side of the reader reports equation, it was an interesting opportunity for me to be the person between the author and the reader and the reader report. And that's been a really rewarding part of the job. You realize how beholden you are, not only to the folks who do the scholarship, to the scholars who read it and comment on it. The whole machine runs based on those folks. Even the pleasure of helping scholars who we don't publish make their work better, you know, that's just tremendously rewarding. Was two of my grad students. I had two grad students both working on American topics, Daniel Pfister and Rachel Jones, and they agreed to be my assistants. So I meet with them once a week. We talk about every decision that I make on the journal. And so that was a terrific development of our relationship and my sense for what the young folks, what young scholars and grad students are thinking about.
Lori, the University Press's music list is a strong music list with a lot of titles. Can you talk about your history with it?
Yeah, sure. I actually was hired into the press by the former music editor, Judy McCullough, not to work with her on music projects, but as a development assistant. And as I came into the press full time in a marketing position, copywriting position, I became very familiar with the list for about 3 years, just wrote copy for the music books as they came through and everything else too, but really started to get a sense of the music publication list at Illinois was about. When Judy retired, I was working on the history list primarily. And so I was set up really well to move that list forward. My own background is in music. I have a doctorate and a master's degree in music. And it was just really a thrill to take on the acquisitions work in that really important list for the press. Judy was incredibly seminal. She got a lot of projects underway. The Music in American Life series was the first dedicated series in American music. There were American music lists going at a couple other presses, but that series really kind of opened the way for supporting American music as a scholarly endeavor. And part of that was the founding of the journal American Music, which happened around the same time. I have continued to have legacy projects from seeds that Judy planted. It's just been an incredible, incredible privilege to take on that list and to be able to put my own stamp on it a little bit, to broaden it in certain ways while continuing to respect the history of this very strong music and culture orientation of the list.
Todd, Lori opened the door to talk about this year's Society for American Music conference. You're leading a panel on musical theater. Can you talk more about that?
That's one of my areas of research. And so often, you know, senior scholars get asked to chair a panel like that. This one's a particular pleasure. One of the panelists is one of my former graduate students doing work I've never heard. So I'll be excited to hear her paper. Musical theater is one of the smaller subfields within American studies, broadly speaking, that American music and SAM has been particularly strong in. It's a place where we all see each other annually. And this is sort of the big panel at SAM this year. We have papers. They all seem to be connected by politics and by a connection to how the content of musical theater in a particular period. And we have shows in this panel from the 30s, the 70s, and the present, how these shows connect to political culture of their time. So these aren't necessarily papers that are about composers and lyricists as much as they are about the content of these shows and how it connects to political culture and trends, which to me is a really exciting turn in musical theater scholarship.
Lori, we have the Journal of American Music, but do you think there are opportunities for the journal and our strength in book acquisitions to connect?
There are a lot of connections through authors. Scholars need to publish both articles and books. And so in a lot of cases, I have conversations with people who are publishing articles, or it turns out that their project is actually more appropriate as an article format than as a book. So I think there's a lot of cross-pollination of authors. There's also just more broadly having a strong kind of synergy and a strong book acquisitions program, a strong, really field-defining journal like American Music positions the press to develop relationships that can lead to additional journal publications. And I think that's a really important kind of acquisition nexus between books and journals, is helping establish the press in an area we can be an attractive publisher for journals in music or other areas of strength.
Todd, would you say that this particular conference is a venue where you would typically source a lot of ideas for the journal?
Definitely. My assistants and I, we go through the program ahead of time. We divide it up. We identify papers and entire panels that we're interested in. We contact those folks sometimes before the conference even to let them know we're coming or that we're interested. Certainly afterwards, that's an important role for the journal and the editor of the journal to signal to young scholars and to any scholar that, you know, your work is of interest for publication. It's hopefully the space where you can also encourage the direction of a piece and give folks some insight on that. During the pandemic, there were quite a few independent papers being given on colloquiums online, like Paula Harper's and Will Robbins' group. And we also, you know, went to those spaces as well. Wherever Americanists are speaking about music, the journal should have a presence expressing interest.
Lori, we are 16 months into the pandemic, and you have done multiple conferences online. Do you think this type of conference can be as effective online as it is in person?
From a publisher's point of view, I don't think it's as effective online. Society for American Music Conference is a great example of a very focused conference with a pretty intimate group in a way. It's not a tiny conference, but it's not a big conference. And there's a lot of room for younger scholars to present their work, a lot of mentoring that goes on, like Todd's been talking about. What we miss is the informal interactions, just like we miss in our daily work. Sam, in particular, it's like a family, really, to be honest. There's a closing reception that where there's a brass band playing in the hall, and that happens after the awards. And so you have a chance to have a drink and talk with every, you know, congratulate people on their awards. And there's a lot of conviviality there that we miss. There's a lot of synergy, kind of serendipity that we miss in the booth with people coming by or bringing another author by to say, here, you really need to talk to Illinois about your project. Also specific to Sam, there typically are several lecture recitals, which are really exciting in person and really diluted, I think, online. You really miss a lot of the impact of that online. On the other side, Todd mentioned taking advantage of other online conferences. I've seen more papers presented at conferences in the last year than I have in the last 15 years, because I can never get away from the booth because there's always people. I spend 8 hours a day talking to people every 20 minutes. And so I rarely have a chance to hear a whole paper or a whole panel. So it's been very exciting to have an opportunity to actually hear what people are presenting in the venue of the panel rather than hearing a version of it in a conversation at the exhibit booth.
That is quite a glasses half full kind of perspective. I'm going to have to remember that, Lori. Thank you. Todd, what do you think sets American Music apart from the other music journals?
Well, we're the oldest. We're approaching our 40th volume, and we're thinking about how we're going to mark that. There's a rich history of the journal. We also include audio examples. We have a terrific forthcoming piece by Elizabeth Le Guin that has Elizabeth singing, doing her own performances of 19th century Mexican music. So that's a technological advantage that we have, I think. We tilt towards music scholars. And I think across the journal's history, it's a space where a scholar who doesn't read musical notation will almost always feel comfortable or get something from the article. It's a space for music scholars to publish and use musical examples. And we have beautiful musical examples. I always try to imagine that the readership includes people who aren't trained as music scholars, and that any article that we publish reaches out to them, is useful to them in some way. And that's an important part of the place the journal has in the broader world of American music studies. Everybody wants to publish about American music, right? It's a terrific topic. You find it, terrific books on it by historians and English professors and folks from across the spectrum. And I've tried in looking for outside reviewers to bring those voices into the conversation. That's one of the things I've tried to preserve. The other thing, I think, frankly, it's just an important outlet for scholars who work on music for which there are few scholarly outlets, like folks who work on 18th and 19th century American music. They need us and we need to publish them. There's many spaces to publish on jazz, to publish on popular music, on 20th century music. The 18th and 19th century scholars, that's a special constituency for us. And they consistently come to us and I've tried to publish them as well.
Lori, due to your rich history with music and your educational background, how does your acquisition work with music titles differ from acquiring titles in other fields?
It definitely makes a difference that I have a background in the subject. When I was a history editor, I mean, there are plenty of history editors who have PhDs in history, and I did not have that background. But I also think that my mentor used to say that it's a mistake to have an acquisitions editor start out in the field of their expertise, because they tend to get mired in kind of the tiny in conversations and not really be able to see that actually only four people are going to be interested in that book. So I think having had a background in other disciplines, history, also folklore, Appalachian studies, first of all, helps me to approach projects as an editor rather than a specialist. So I don't consider myself to be an intellectual peer in terms of the content to the scholars that I talk to, and the conversations from my point of view aren't really about establishing my credentials as a expert in 19th century music, which I'm not, but rather to serve as an editorial voice for the people that I'm talking with. I think that there is a breadth of methodology in music, and Todd touched on this a little bit. There's historical work, there's archival work, there's ethnographic work. Sometimes we publish work that's really more of a music theory topic. Traditionally, musicology has been a very text-based, you know, you have the piece of music, you read what's in it. That's kind of going out of fashion, I think, and that's never really been that central to Illinois' list. But I love working in a field where there's these different kinds of methodologies going on. There tend to be more independent scholars in music. So, for example, a lot of our bluegrass titles are written by independent scholars. That's a difference from other fields. Most of the history books that I work on are written by professional historians. And it just opens the field up a little bit, I think, to different voices.
As Todd mentioned, the universal appeal of American music and people wanting to submit and talk about and write about is pretty ubiquitous. My question for you, Todd, when you're reviewing submissions for the journal, what topics draw your attention the most?
I've been lucky, and the things I've been interested in publishing have sort of come to the journal. One of the things that I'm fascinated by are scholars who write sort of unknown musical lives into music history. And I think journals like American Music, that's the place where somebody who maybe not going to get a biography in music and American life, or a dictionary article or an encyclopedia article, isn't going to do them justice. American Music is a space where those voices can be heard. So like we published, Julianne Lindbergh wrote an article on Reginald Bean, who was a Broadway composer from the middle decades of the 20th century, a man who struggled with the lack of opportunity for African-Americans on Broadway at the time. Within that, then there's also articles that look at unknown musical cultures. So for instance, we have a piece coming out on LGBTQ open mic culture in Southern California and the way music operates in that community. I think that's one thing that I've tried to cultivate. So one of the most exciting things that we have coming out in our next issue, I believe, is an article about Chicago in the early 20th century by Samantha Ege, who's an exciting young scholar. She looks at two composers, one African-American, Florence Price, one white American, Theodora Ryder. And these two women were pursuing classical music, art music in Chicago in the same decades. They're in the same large, important American city, pursuing this same musical activity as women, one of them black and one of them white. This comparative study that Samantha does, it not only writes these women more fully into American music history, and particularly Florence Price. There's a great renaissance of Florence Price scholarship right now. It also does so in this intersectional and comparative way that it's just exciting to be able to feature that in the journal. And one of the things that I did is give Samantha a little bit more space. So her article is a bit longer than the articles we usually feature. If there's anything for sure about American music history writing is that it's going to take a really long time for women composers and composers of color to catch up with the thousands of pages and words written about white men composers. This article addresses a lot of those issues, and it does so in an exciting way with an exciting new voice in the field. Say the other larger topic area that we've tried to encourage and had a little bit of success with is to put the definition of America. We have an article about Indonesian gamelan music in Canada we published recently. Our book review editor, Jackie Avila, who is really terrific, she solicited a long review of a huge book of Spanish language scholarship on Latin American music. So it's a Latin American scholar reviewing this book. Jackie translated it for us. So broadening the definition of America in the title American Music has been a priority as well.
Lori, I'll ask you a similar question about books. What music topics get your attention when authors submit their prospective books?
I think about a couple of things. It's in this moment more focused than ever, and it's been a focus of ours for historically as well, but very focused on topics by authors of color and topics like Todd mentioned that kind of broaden the narrative of American music, but even to move outside of American music, work that changes our idea of who's making music, what the significance of this musical activity is. You know, that's the kind of work that gets my attention. For our list, another quality that's really important is to have work that's grounded in some way in the cultural materials, either ethnographic materials, archival materials, that's not sort of floating on a cloud of theory, but is really anchored by people's experiences. That's, I think, a real quality of Illinois' list across the board and really the defining feature of the American music list. I do publish biographies, and many of our biographies have been very successful, and that continues to be a genre that people are interested in. But like Todd mentioned, biographies are kind of a paradox because it's hard to get people to read a biography about someone they haven't heard of before. But on the other hand, how many biographies of people that you've heard of do you need? So I tend to really be interested in projects that are about music and community, as opposed to kind of the great individual generating musical work out of their own genius. And again, I think that speaks to the kind of community grounding of our series, The Working Class in American History, for example, areas of our list that really try to provide a platform for marginalized voices, as we often say, and just kind of celebrate music making of ordinary people.
As a follow-up, Lori, for a prospective author, I want to submit a topic to the University of Illinois Press. What will get my book or my proposal at the top of your pile of interest?
I guess two things. One, that you ask big questions. Second, well, maybe three things. Ask big questions. Go about answering those questions in ways that draw on grounded source material, on historical sources, on kind of rigorous digging into archives or broad ethnography that is longitudinal over many years, so that the big question is connected to the grounding rather than separated from it. I would also look for projects that challenge received histories. That's really exciting work to me, that we thought this is what we knew about Blacks in vaudeville, but it turns out if you really dig into the newspaper archives or you really look at the sources and piece things together, there's a different story. Those are the projects that attract my attention, the methodology, the big questions that are being asked, and the kind of mission of not accepting received histories uncritically.
Todd, as you move forward as editor, is there anything about the journal that you plan on changing or adapting?
My 3 years are almost up, and we have some things coming out that I'm particularly excited about. We have a whole special issue coming out of articles on Disney, all sorts of Disney products and platforms and eras, this critical look at Disney. I have some things that I'm hoping come out. I'm hoping for the journal to speak directly to anti-racist scholarship in the classroom and beyond. As slow as it sometimes feels, I realize that a scholarly journal like American Music that publishes 4 times a year can actually be pretty up to date, can respond rather quickly to how things are changing and to the questions that music scholars, and particularly our constituency of music scholars, that they're dealing with in the classroom and in their own work. And so I'm hoping that we can speak to some anti-racist scholarship and strategies. And like I said, you know, the journal is approaching its 40th volume, and I'm hoping to engage a broad spectrum of folks to write short pieces that don't reflect on the past so much as look forward, maybe reflect on the recent past. I think there's a moment here where things are going to start getting back to normal, right? Hopefully on some level. And we're going to have to reflect on the last 18 months, but also understand how it's going to impact the future. I think the Academy's in an interesting spot, in a pretty scary spot in a lot of ways. Things turn around fast enough for us to speak to that, and I'm hoping to have that happen.
Thank you for listening to The Upside, the University of Illinois Press podcast. The 47th Annual Conference for the Society of American Music is online from June 9th through 12th. Dr. Todd Decker and Dr. Lori Matheson, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth.